Got a case? Visit frankwalkerlaw.com. That's frankwalkerlaw.com.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
Invisible Fence Brand has helped over 2 million pets enjoy more freedom in the yard so owners can relax, knowing their pets won't run away or get into trouble. Guaranteed. Our Boundary Plus yard systems give pets up to 30% more yard space and even have a patented safety feature that leaves no room for escape. We provide expert installation plus four-step professional pet training. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Mark Caboli breaks down the coach's tape in his film session every week in The Trib. Then he joins Ken and Guy to teach them how a real man analyzes football.
Hey, that's enough. Let me show you how to do it like a man. Step over to the abdominator, and I will shout slogans at you.
It's the weekly Mark Caboli segment on Trib Live Radio.
Well, I looked it up, Guy. Bell Vernon is 5-0 in high school football.
Oh, I could have told
you that. Wow. That might be for the first time since Caboli was their mauling left guard back
He graduated. It's the first time since 2000 or 2001 when they made it to Three River Stadium.
I think Caboli played with Tom Sula in the early 80s. When year did you graduate, Mark?
92. I was way done before that.
Yeah.
Well, good on your Leopards. What's news from
the Steelers? They were impressive, Mark. You don't cover high school football at all anymore, do you?
This is the first year since, I think, 19 years I have not covered a high school football game. First one I ever covered was September 21st, 1996. Elizabeth Forward hosted Bell Vernon. Bell Vernon whooped them.
Some might say you're Steelers 365 these days.
Yeah, you know what? I know one thing they don't call me is breaking down the film study anymore, but you guys still have that intro. Buzzsaw's name in there.
We like to use that abdominator.
That's all right. Yeah. I don't even know what that means, but what's an abdominator?
You are the abdominator.
Some machine you buy on TV at 4 o'clock in the morning when you're drunk eating cold macaroni and cheese, thinking that if you buy it, your stomach will look like it did when you were 19.
So that's what you did yesterday. You know, Kenny just takes random days off now.
I have four of them in my garage.
Abdominator.
Mark, what's up with Ben Roethlisberger's health? We got a report from Lock and Four that maybe the Chiefs game. Do you buy this?
Well, I'm sure that he's thinking that. I don't know how anybody in the world can put a definitive timeline on it when it was injured. What were we looking at? 8 days ago now? And best we've seen from him is limping around. I mean, I think that's a guesstimate. I wouldn't be shocked. I don't know if that's the proper way to go about it. I would much rather him be healthy, I think, what is it, the next week for Cincinnati? But, you know, I think it's a total guess, like I said. I mean, I believe he went to the doctors today, Ben, to probably get an update on how he's going. I mean, I think everything's been put on the fact that he was able to have some weight bearing on his leg, what was it, four days afterward. And that typically would tell you that the bone bruise that was the most concerning part might not be as once thought as critical than it was. So, I mean, the MCL injury is a 2 to 4 week injury. So the other numbers were coming because of the bone bruise. So maybe that, I'm sure it can be, but like I said, I think it's just guesstimating at this point.
Well, beyond his injury, I mean, in the next couple weeks now, Victober will continue. Martavis Bryant is back, and you talked to Martavis yesterday, but it sounded like he wasn't answering many questions about anything, huh?
Victober, is that like Bucktober, the shortest month of the year? Is that very similar?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Martavis was, you know, I got him to say one thing, you know, behind the scenes when everybody else left, where he said he's confident that this won't happen again. There were some rumblings that something might have been coming around, so at least that's a good thing. If he puts his name to, hey, I am not doing this, but we might ends up putting it on his tombstone here, and next time he gets this done, where if something happens, he would say, would harken back to the time where he said, this won't happen again. So he really doesn't have much choice. I mean, you just break it down financially what this guy's lost. Forget about everything else. He's been fined 4 paychecks. He's been fined 2 paychecks. Now he's been fined another 4. You're looking at a guy that was making what? I'm guessing here, 600 grand last year, and he's already had probably close to half of that taken away. Maybe not half, but darn close. Yeah, maybe half. How many games did he miss? 8, 9, 12? Half for a fine. So, you know, he knows in a year or two, if he can stay healthy, he can make some money. So it's all a motivating factor, and I'm sure he doesn't want to let his teammates down. However, he should have thought of that before felt drug test number 2, 3, and 4. So I guarantee one thing, he'll be in the lineup on Sunday against the Chargers, and I think they're going to need to get him the ball, force him the ball, throw the ball up. It's not that difficult to throw the ball as far as you can if you're Mike Vick, and let Martavis go get it.
Yeah, that was my question. Let's assume he comes back, keeps his nose clean, no pun intended, and I mean, he averaged 21 yards a catch last year. That's, and him and Vic seemed, it was only one game, but the Buffalo game seemed to have great chemistry, like, immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, what did he do? I mean, he threw the ball probably as far as he could, and Martavis went up and get it in that Buffalo game. I think it was 63 yards on, I think it was his first play. Vic called that a monumental play yesterday. I was like, it was the fourth preseason game against Buffalo. I don't think you can call anything monumental that happens in that. But that's what you have to do. I mean, I think that's what he brings. So look at last week, man. You remember a couple of years ago when I was just going crazy about the 13.7 yards per reception, and it was just an amazing number after that San Francisco game? Against the Ravens, they averaged 3.7 yards per reception. You're not going to win many games by doing that. So you throw in Martavis's 21 yards per. I mean, he's done that his whole career. You go back to Clemson, he was averaging those type of numbers. So it's not like it's a fluke thing. He's a very difficult matchup. And you would imagine those things trickle down, too, to be able to open some more things up with Antonio Brown. And I still think Vic is talented enough to be able to get those guys the ball in spaces where they can succeed. It was tough last week because he had one practice, and that practice entailed nose pads, no helmets, and I've never seen that before in my history of covering this team. A in-week game, even if it is only, a short week, not even having helmets on. That's very OTA-like type of practice there. So how much was Vic ready? Probably not much, which probably led to some of the things he wasn't allowed to do, and that was, I think, evident by some of those play calls.
Mark Cabali, our guest, live from the South Side. Tomlin Presser coming up in 20 minutes. Mark, of course, our Steelers beat reporter for Trib Total Media. When you look back at the kicking fiasco and now Chris Boswell in, Mark, what's this do to their money situation? How surprised are you they cut Scobie, and do they regret trading that pick? I mean, they must now, right?
Yeah, I mean, at the point, at the time, it seemed like a no-brainer. You get a veteran guy who's been successful in the league, who has a pretty big leg, who can kick the ball to the end zone, and you're only giving up a 6-round pick for him, basically what you got for trading your punter away. I know you had to pay something like $2 million, but I'm not quite sure how much they're on the books for there. I'm sure it's not the entire $2 million, but it's probably a good portion of it. I mean, I would have stayed with Scobie another week or so to see what he's able to do. I don't know what Chris Boswell showed in his half hour to an hour audition at Heinz Field that leads you to believe that he's going to be successful. Can't look at his resume because he's never had a kick in the league before. But, you look at it, though. I mean, this league, I think, has been changing the way it goes with field goals. I mean, kickers. In the past, you wouldn't even think about putting a rookie in there or a guy that has no experience. You look, I counted about 6 of them on rosters right now that you've never heard of before, either first-year guys or rookies who are in prominent roles. I mean, you're looking at San Diego, New Orleans, now Pittsburgh, maybe not Jacksonville is prominent, but what it sounds like is teams are more willing to take chances on younger, inexperienced kickers than ever before. And then, like I said, there's probably a quarter, maybe a fifth of the kickers in the league now are, you know, nobody's guys or rookies or first-year guys have never kicked before. So maybe it will work. Put it this way, it couldn't be any much worse. But I would have stayed with Scalby for another week, but I don't make the calls.
Yeah. Well, when you look at all the problems around the league, I'm not sure you're getting anybody any better. And I know it cost them a game against their most hated rival, but I think I would have thought twice about letting him go, too. One thing, Mark, and I don't know where you stand on this. I usually get shouted down by most football writers. You know, this, to me, proves the – I mean, I think kickers belong in the Hall of Fame, and I'm not saying you put 50 of them in there, but I think it's such an important part of the modern game. If you're the best punter or the best place kicker, you belong in there as much as guys that go in the builder category because they had a bunch of money. I mean, I just, you know, it shows you how important they are to winning football games, and yet people want to say, kickers don't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Sounds like you've been talking to Stag a little bit too much. You know, I don't know, you know.
You could disagree.
My thought on that is you put a guy into the Hall of Fame who is, Ed Bouchette always says, he's a cameraman. You know, what's his name from NFL Films? So why?
Yeah, Ed Sable.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we lose him?
Might have lost Mark over on the south side.
A kicker might have kicked him in the head.
Getting close to Tomlin time. We got too many TV interference cameras going on down there. I don't know. We'll get Mark back in the line here if we can. Yeah, he's right about the lack of any kind of an NFL history with this guy. He's been in with Houston Texans and the New York Giants, Chris Boswell, the new kicker, Gee, but, you know, he's not made a kick in a game that matters. Now, he did kick with Rice University. He was a three-year starter there, three-year kicker there. He also was a punter, I guess, for a little while. And he was a punter, actually, with Houston, too. So, the leg is not the concern, but, you know, no matter who they signed, could have been Kai Forbath or any of these other kickers, it just seems there's a chemistry thing with Heinz Field. And, you know, actually Boswell's going to make his start on the road. He might be happy, guy, that he's going to get San Diego first and then warm up to Heinz Field a little bit. Because, you know, although, you know, Scobie missed two in New England, that started his decline. But it just seems like you either have it or you don't at Heinz Field for whatever reason. Over the years, Jeff Reed had it, Swisham has it. Maybe this guy will or won't have it. I think we got Mark back now. Sorry, Cabali, we lost you there.
That was me. The dreaded Squirrel Hill tunnels come up and bit me.
Oh, nice.
We can put a man on the moon. We can't get cell phone reception in a tunnel.
Yeah, that's an ongoing. Get the mayor on the line for that one. Well, what about Shazier's return? Were there concerns?
He looks like it. I mean, he did practice yesterday, but, that's a weird injury. Something tells me that if it was later in the season in some must-win situations, he would have been able to play. You've seen guys play through that type of injury a lot before. A little weakness here, you just strap the elbow or the shoulder down and say, go get him. So I think he'll help a lot. I mean, Spence did what he could do to replace him, but, you know, there was the reason why somebody that Justin Forsett was able to run for 150 yards because partly is because guys like Stephon Tuitt got out of the gaps at times, and some of the inside linebackers, and a little bit has to do with Timmons, a little bit has to do with Spence, weren't able to make tackles. So I think it should help Shazier. I mean, it brings a whole new dynamic to what they do as well. I mean, they can blitz him, he can shoot the gap and be disruptive, so he will be a definite addition, and I'm quite sure he'll be playing in San Diego Monday.
Well, early size up of this matchup, Mark. I know it's a week away here now. It's going to be feel like forever by the time we get this game going, but is this a good time to take a trip to San Diego, or what could the Chargers do that give them problems?
Well, it's the West Coast, and that never treats the Steelers well. However, one place they do play decent is in San Diego. It's going to be probably the most difficult matchup for the Steelers to date because Phillip Rivers can throw the ball around like crazy, and you really don't have a grasp on if this secondary is good enough to withstand that. They were able to last week against Flacco, who was coming off a big game by just pressuring the living crap out of him. I'm not quite sure if you can do that with Philip Rivers. But, yeah, I mean, these are tough games. They're very tough games. It has to help the Steelers. It's 11 days out. They're able to prepare, get ready for him, get Vic ready compared to last time they played with four games. But, you know, you're going to have to win AFC games. And if you don't win the division, it might come down to tiebreakers at the end of the year. And you're already looking at tiebreakers in week five. And you would have to think that San Diego might be a part of that. So it's a very critical game. I think they can go in there and win. I think they won in there. Did they win the last time they were there? I don't even know the last time they were there. This is where I usually look at Josh Taylor and say, Josh, when was the last time the Steelers in San Diego? And he'll tell me.
Yeah, he'll make something up, and it's not right half the time. So don't rely on that.
I don't think it was the Bettis year. It had to be after that, right?
They when played Bettis out there in 06. 2006, they lost 23-13.
Was that the... No, it wasn't the Bettis year then. Bettis year was the year before that. He was able to fill
they
in
They won
there.
Out there in 05. They played there in 05 and 06. And they
won I don't think they've
26.
Ever... I mean, they've struggled with Seattle, San Francisco, even in Oakland. But they seem to be able to win a little bit in San Diego. And I'm a little worried about the secondary yet. I mean, I know Ross Cockrell. I just like saying the name. Ross Cockrell was playing. I mean, he's a little. Nobody saw that coming, you know, a guy that's actually able to make plays in the secondary. But, Antoine Blake and William Gay, I don't know if they've been tested as much as they can. I think Rivers will be the guy. I mean, Keenan Allen's one of the better receivers in the league, and I think Gates might be back. Am I correct on that one?
He is.
I think he was a four-game suspension, right?
I think you're
once
right.
Once again, I'll look at Josh Taylor and say, hey, is that four games for Antonio Gates? Was that eight? I don't know. He could be back. So that's a decent team. So not going to be easy.
You're right. Four-game suspension, and Gates is back, as Martavis Bryant is. So.
Yeah, I mean, I said the same thing yesterday. When you look at both wins are in the NFC right now, and you start, it's not too early. I mean, the Bengals do look like the cream of the crop here. It's not too early to think about what you'd have to do if you were going to get a wild card spot from here, and you can't fall any further behind in AFC losses. I mean, you already got who's someone's 3-0 in the AFC already. That would be in the mix.
Cincinnati? Did they 3-0?
Cincinnati
got a tough one. They got a tough one this week. They got Seattle, I believe. But I think that's in Cincinnati. Yeah, they have to win the AFC games because unless you're going to win the division, I mean, and at this point right now, you're already two games behind the Bengals. I know you have two remaining, but by the time you play them in November, you're already nine games in, and it might be almost insurmountable. But they are the Bengals. They typically don't run away with anything. But yeah, if you're a guy that had a choice, I would pick AFC wins over NFC wins, that's for sure.
In your opinion, Mark, they got up 20-6 in that game early in the second half. Did they try to sit on that too much? Was Vic's lack of, I mean, he didn't even have 100 yards passing by the time it went into overtime. How much of that was situational that they got the lead and they thought, hey, we'll be happy with a couple of field goals and win this game? How much of it was he didn't have that much time to work with the starters? How much better do you think we can expect him, or more open do you expect this offense to be starting Monday night?
I think they were shocked they were off 20-6, to be honest with you, or 20-3, whatever that score was. I don't think they figured that was going to be the case. So, I think that's why the game plan was what it was. And it was coming in there being ultra-conservative. It's funny, they come in with an ultra-conservative game plan, hoping that you maybe have a chance to win it at the end with a kick. And that's exactly what happened, and they end up losing it with the kick. I think they just didn't want Mike Vick to come in there and have any chance of turning the ball over, getting down big early, then having a huge, you know, deficit to come back for. And they felt that wasn't possible. But once they got up, you would figure that was enough for them to be able to win with guys like Le'Veon Bell and stuff. Now, I think they will, you know, take the shackles off of Vic a little bit here. One thing he can't do is throw timing patterns across the middle. That's what they had him do a little bit, throw the ball deep, get the ball. They have to get the ball to ground more. I mean, even if it's quick things, bubble screens, end the rounds, get the ball in his hands a lot more than four times or five times, that's for sure. But I think They get two extra practices this week. Think about it. They got Monday with their get right day, as they call it. They got an extra practice on Saturday because of a Monday. So I think you'll drastically see Todd Haley have a little bit more confidence in him and open up his playbook a little bit more.
Well, real quick, Mark, on that front, did Antonio Brown pout that he wasn't getting the ball last week on the sidelines, walking away from Vic, or was that not the accurate, not the case?
Kenny, all wide receivers pout. I mean, I'm guessing that if he had 12 catches for 190 yards, he would have been pouting on that play as well. So I didn't really see the play, but I would imagine if anything to do with stats, that's, I would say yeah. Because Antonio Brown loves his stats. And I don't want to suggest this, but maybe, you know what, maybe I'll suggest this part. Deep down in your mind, are you thinking that last fourth down play on that out pattern to Antonio Brown? That they're thinking, maybe if we get the ball to him quick, we not only get a first down, we get him 50 yards. I mean, you created the monster last year when you could have kneed on the ball in Jacksonville and tried to keep this streak together. So I wouldn't put anything past any receiver. I don't think that was quick, Kenny.
Well, God, I hope not. I hope they really weren't thinking about 50 yards at that point in the game. That
be... I put nothing past anybody, Ken. Nothing. Nothing.
All right, don't put anything past Tomlin here today.
I'm sure we're going to be filled with the news of the day and information and all this good stuff.
You got it.
Thanks,
really. Buddy.
All right.
Mark Cabali, Steelers reporter, down on the south side, through the Squirrel Hill tunnels. He got there finally. Guy, you're right about the schedules or the standings. Pulling up the AFC, there are only four teams with winning records in the AFC. Patriots 3-0, Bengals 4-0, Broncos 4-0, and the Jets are 3-1. Everybody else is 2-2 or worse.
Yeah, and look at their AFC records. I think the Steelers are the only winless team in the conference, right?
That's a good question. I don't know that part of it, but 0-2, that's not going to help. You're right. The San Diego 2-2 situation, they're tied with the Raiders. Pretty big game for them from their perspective. You get a home game on a Monday night. You know, granted, the Steelers have a long time to prepare, but you get them with Michael Vick coming in. They got to be thinking that this is a must-win game too, right? I mean, and they get Antonio Gates back, which is a great point from Mark. It's a big return for them. So this is it's a tough game for Pittsburgh to go out on the road there and try to steal one, even with Martavis Bryant coming back. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this between now and next week. It feels like it's a million miles away right now, but Tomlin's presser is on the way at top of the hour. Bengals do host Seattle this weekend at 1 o'clock. I outthought myself, Guy, in picking pork. I thought the Chiefs might go in there and steal one or cover. They settled for 7 field goals. Just to troll Josh Scobie. And
7
then
field goals by Cairo Santos.
He was the one guy that was making them over the weekend.
Am I in first place by myself? Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. Josh Taylor sank a little bit this week.
17-6. I wish I would have actually bet on these games.
Maybe you got DraftKings insider trading.
There you go.
Early line is the Steelers underdogs by 3. That's pretty much held with the over-under 45 next week. This Chris Boswell was looking up his stats from Rice University, Guy, because I know everybody wants to know how good he was at Rice. He missed 6 kicks in 2012. He missed 2 extra points that year. He had all told 11 field goals of 50 or more yards, it looks like. So he's got a good leg, that's for sure. Good percentage of touchbacks on kickoffs, so, again, who knows. But he's a Dallas area native, Fort Worth, I guess, to be more precise.
If he kicks a field goal in the last 60 seconds, will he be Minute Rice?
Oh, God.
Sorry.
I think he's just the boss. If he kicks one, he's instantly the boss. If he misses one, yeah, we got to come up with a nifty miss. Scobie Doobie Don't was pretty good for Scobie. We need some nickname help on that one. All right, Tomlin presser, top of the hour. Also, I was reading some of this Andrew McCutchen article that he wrote himself for the Players Tribune guy. It's excellent. I think people should check it out, playerstribune.com.
I did a story on him in spring training when he wrote the article for them about black kids not playing baseball anymore.
Yeah, it's
when he's not screwing around. Thought he's a very thoughtful guy. You know what I mean? If you catch him in the right mood, you can really talk deep stuff with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just talking about the 2013 wildcard game and how amazing it was, the crazy atmosphere and the routines that they get in through the year. But, you know, this is why they played for nights like this, for games like this. So,
oh, Ken, I've been doing this since before Kutch was born. That was one of the most incredible atmospheres I've ever been around. And that's counting Super Bowls, Stanley Cups, All-Star Games, World Series, National Collegiate Championships. That was incredible.
Here's how Kutch finishes it. He says, the wild card system might not be perfect, but you can't deny that it's a heck of a lot of fun. It feels like Christmas Eve already. I don't want to be able to hear myself think Pittsburgh. So he's calling for it again. He mysteriously leaves out the Bumgarner game in this
yeah.
in this Cueto reminisce. Let's forget about last year. No, but I think he's appreciative of the atmosphere, which, you know, I joked about the meaningless games in September there, but it took every win to guarantee another one of these. 98 wins doesn't buy you what it used to, but it does get you a little home atmosphere tomorrow night. The umpiring crew has been announced for this game. The crew chief is John Hirschbeck. Behind the plate will be Jeff Nelson, who I have no idea who that is. Do you?
That's a name I vaguely have heard, but I'm off the top of my head, it doesn't bring a negative connotation. I don't think of a blown call or a
right.
You know, the umpires had so much more personality. A, when you had National League umpires, and there weren't so many. I mean, you go weeks at a time without seeing the same umpire twice. And B, when I was a kid, Bob Prince talked about the umpires as much as he did the players. I felt like I knew the umpires. I could probably name more umpires from 1970 than I could now.
This guy umped Game 7 of last year's World Series between the Giants and the Royals at Kauffman Stadium, so he's obviously well-respected.
Well, that doesn't mean anything anymore. Those guys rotate now. You used to get to work the postseason based on merit. Now, you could be a second-year umpire and still get a shot. And a Kenny Burkhart down there at first base. He's out.
He umped a no-hitter this year. Mariners pitcher Hisashi Iwakuma's no-hitter. So he's maybe a little pitcher-friendly. I don't know. Who knows? On that subject, too. Just throw that out there. Get ready for Jeff Nelson's balls and strikes with Arrieta v. Cole tomorrow night. Thanks to Rob Beer-Temple for that information. Quick pause. Giovanni's Pizza Hour, Four Horsemen Hour next. The Mike Tomlin Presser coming your way.